As I said, most of Shakespeare's first act is not in the opera. Britain opens his opera in the forest. The singing you just heard is the fairies, who are played by a chorus of young boys. Well, here's the first way in which Britain gives structure to what would otherwise be a butchering of the Shakespeare original. Remember that there are three different stories in the play. They're the fairies, led by Titania and Oberon, who are fighting among themselves. There are the two pairs of lovers, Hermia and Lysander, and Helena and Demetrius. And there are the comic rustics, Bottom, Quince, Starveling, and their lot. Notice I have not mentioned Prince Theseus or his fiancée Hippolyta. They appear in the opera, but frankly, they're relatively unimportant. Some years back, it became popular when presenting the stage play to have Oberon double as Theseus, with his wife Titania standing in for Hippolyta. This means that the power structure of the real world of Athens and the fairy world of the forest are the same. You can't get away from the man. But in the opera, Hippolyta is an alto, while Titania is a soprano. Even more extreme is the difference between Theseus, a bass, and Oberon, a countertenor. This is intentional and important. The worlds of the fairies, the lovers, and the mechanicals are different, very different, starting with the fairy world. The treble boys and the countertenor Oberon are not sounds we're used to hearing, any more than we're used to seeing an elf standing at a bus stop. Remember that I started the commentary by playing Bottom's tuneful little prologue from Pyramus and Thisbe. The truth is, I didn't want to scare anyone by admitting up front that the fairies are atonal, as in Arnold Schoenberg, Alban Berg, 12-tone Wozzeck, Lulu atonal. The fairy theme, which you just heard in the orchestra in that last excerpt, is essentially a tone row, meaning it includes all 12 notes of the scale, the black keys on the piano as well as the white ones. You can't get stranger than that, which is not to say that the fairies are unmusical. Puck is another story. He's so strange he doesn't even sing. Apparently no one's told him it's an opera. The character of Puck is played by an actor gymnast who speaks all of his lines, while in the background you hear a trumpet accompanying him. Oberon is mad at his wife Titania because she stole a young boy to be one of her attendants. Oberon is not angry with Titania because she kidnapped the boy. He just wants the changeling for himself. Unfortunately, when there is dissension in the spirit world, it manifests itself in natural phenomenon. Animals are barren, the weather changes, and the seasons become confused. When Titania refuses to give up the boy, Oberon orders Puck to find a magic flower that makes its victim fall in love with the next person or object she sees.
Upon the next line.
No sooner does Puck leave to accomplish his task than on come the lovers, or at least two of them, Lysander and Hermia. Hermia's father wants her to marry Demetrius, but she and Lysander are in love. Lysander begs her to elope with him.
I swear to thee, by Cupid's strongest bow.
I swear to thee, by his best arrow with the golden hand.
I swear to thee, by the simplicity of Venus' dove.
I swear to thee, by that which needed salt and prospers loves.
I swear to thee.
Where to begin? First of all, did you notice that it takes them a while to agree on what musical key they're in? It's not quite something out of Charles Ives, but it's charming and it's funny. They're both talking, but neither one is listening. Then think about the range of their voices. Of course Hermia's father doesn't want her to marry Lysander. He's a tenor. That's probably why she fell in love with him. But she's a mezzo. Now, it should come as no surprise that the other pair of lovers are a soprano and a baritone. Overall, this makes sense. The lovers are a normal quartet, soprano, alto, tenor, baritone. In contrast to the fairies, the lovers come from the real world. But individually, they're mismatched. The tenor is supposed to go off with the soprano. There's no similar rule that the bass gets the mezzo, but it stands to reason. In opera, it's either that or demons drag him off to hell. The latter seems to be more common, and being a bass myself, I'd like to register a complaint about that. Nevertheless, this ambiguity about which pairing makes for better couples is part of the story, as we're about to find out. The other pair of lovers, Demetrius and Helena, now appear. They are in more open disagreement than their friends, since the baritone does not return the soprano's love. In fact, he's in love with Hermia, the mezzo. Oberon finds this all very perplexing and decides to fix it. When Puck comes back with the magic flower, Oberon tells him to use the flower on both Demetrius and Titania. So far, we've only seen two of Midsummer Night's Dream's worlds, the fairies and the lovers. And there's been a nice symmetry with Oberon closing each section. The fairy king appears after the opening fairy chorus, then again after the first pair of lovers, and finally with Puck after the second pair of lovers. The middle of the act is all about the mechanicals, who have come into the forest to rehearse the play they mean to perform at King Theseus's wedding. This next scene is about as silly as you would expect from the play, with Peter Quince, Snug, Flute, and Snout fighting over which parts they are to perform. Snug is my favorite.
Here is a play fitted a few, the lion's part written. Pray you, if be, give it me. For I am slow of study. Study.
Do it extempore, for it is nothing but glory.
Notice that the trombone gets a good workout anytime lion is mentioned in the opera. Britain obviously thought the sound of the instrument and the sound of the animal had much in common. Now that we've passed the midpoint of the act, the larger structure starts to become apparent. Just as the act opened with the fairies and moved on to the lovers, it now goes back to the lovers, before ending with the fairies. Hermia and Lysander are exhausted, but when they lie down to sleep, Puck mistakenly uses the magic flower on Lysander instead of Demetrius.
Through the forest have I gone, but Athenian found I none, on whose eyes I might approve this flower's force in stirring love. Night and silence, night and silence. Who is here? Who is here? Weeds of Athens he doth wear. This is he my master said despised the Athenian maid. Churl upon thine eyes I throw all the power this charm doth hold. So awake when I am gone, for I must now to Oberon.
No sooner have Puck and his trumpet gone off to find Oberon than Helena discovers the sleeping Lysander. Of course, when Helena wakes him up, Lysander immediately falls in love with her. This is too bad, Helena thinks, since she assumes he doesn't mean it but is just making fun of her. Helena runs off into the woods, followed by Lysander, so that when Hermia wakes up from a bad dream, she is alone. Now, when the mortals wake up, it's the fairies' bedtime. So Titania asks her attendants to sing her to sleep.
Use the disease with double tongue, thorny head, hogs, legal sea, muscle blind, words, little wrong, cavalry of Fairy Queen. Philomel, Philomel, with melody singing, I sweet la 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 la.
The lullaby works, Titania falls asleep, but the fairy who is left behind to guard their sleeping queen doesn't do such a good job. The act ends with Oberon sneaking by the guard and casting a love spell over his unsuspecting wife. Listen for the celeste at the beginning and the strings at the end. The celeste is a keyboard instrument that sounds a little bit like a xylophone, and because of its eerie, otherworldly timbre, it's associated with the fairy king throughout the opera. Those grinding notes on the string bass are a premonition of what is going to happen in the second act, when Titania wakes up and falls in love with a donkey.
What thou seest when thou dost wake, do it for thy true love take, love and languish for his sake. Be dear, wake when some vile thing.